The Tom Woods Show, episode 2225.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com.
Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. We've got Anthony Samaroff back on the show. Anthony is part of that elite group, a very, very small group of people indeed, who has had an entire week of episodes on the Tom Woods Show. There has indeed been an Anthony Samaroff week. You may know Anthony Samaroff because he has visited pretty much every, not quite every state in the union, but he's been all over the United States, even though he lives in Scotland, travels like crazy, speaks all over the place. He's the author of is it Universal Basic Income For and Against?
Yes, that's the libertarian book.
Yeah. And then tell us some more about Anthony Samaroff, because you have a life outside the Tom Woods Show.
I do. Okay, well, first of all, I'd just like to say how great it is to be back with the old man. And you have been, like many of us, you're like the father figure of the libertarian world. So even though you're not that old, it's a very apt moniker you've adopted for yourself.
Geez, no, I used to be your graduate student friend of the libertarian world. I don't want to hear I'm the father. At least I'm not the grandfather. Could be worse.
You made your own bed.
So I've got your ebook. By the way, we got to see Anthony in his natural habitat in Scotland not too terribly long ago. We had a great dinner. I didn't want it to end, honestly. The conversation was so great.
Oh, yeah.
The food was delicious. All right. But you have an ebook out now, following in, if I may put it this way, the old man's footsteps.
That's right.
And it's called Seven Big Pharma Myths Debunked. And one thing I like about this ebook is the sheer gall of calling your ebook Seven Big Pharma Myths Debunked and yet having 11 chapters inside.
Okay. That's just bonus material. You've got to over-deliver.
That's right. He over-delivers. My gosh, everything Anthony Samaroff produces from now on, I have to get because I'm going to get more than my money's worth. Before we jump into it, let me say, just from an autobiographical standpoint, that until 2020, and I know there are going to be some listeners who are just going to roll their eyes and they won't believe how naive or out of it I was. Until 2020, I just didn't pay that much attention to Big Pharma. Yes, if they have some explicit connection with the state, then of course I was always against that. But I just felt like I have enough things I have to learn about. It's like trying to figure out the real story of the Kennedy assassination. You know, you'd have to read 100,000 books and they all contradict each other. And I just, you know, I'm only on this earth one time. I gotta be efficient with the use of my time. Well, okay, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking because you pull back the curtain on this thing. And you know what? I'll be further honest. I'll say that I thought people who obsessed over Big Pharma maybe had a bit of a screw loose. You know, they're just contrarians for the sake of it. And don't you know that modern medicine is a miracle? I am sorry. I mean, I never said that openly to anybody, but I apologize for even thinking that to all you people who were way ahead of me on this. And even at the beginning of this whole thing in 2020, I said, look, I'm not a libertarian because I disagree with every single consensus. I don't know. Maybe I am now. Maybe I am. Because you pull back the curtain on this and you won't believe what you find. So you're writing a book on this. Talk to me.
Right. Well, thank you so much. First of all, I appreciate your praise because obviously I hold the old man's opinion in high regard. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was going from project to project because after the pandemic hit, I was like, am I like rearranging the screws on the, rearranging the deck chairs? You got the word screws in my mouth and sometimes I do think I have a screw loose. Am I like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic trying to write about libertarian theory right now? So I was in a little bit of an existential crisis because I love writing, but I didn't know what to focus my attention on. Thankfully, I'd already started a book on healthcare a while ago, which I'd put aside, and I'd drawn a lot of material from that. But there was another project that was involved in helping someone else write a book that was more like from a naturopathic perspective. So I was able to draw on materials from that I learned from both of them. And as soon as I started this project, I knew this was what I was meant to be doing. But I thought, It's going to take me quite a while to finish the book. There's no use all this information just being on my hard disk while I finish it. So I've got to put something out. So I've taken excerpts from the forthcoming book, which I think I might just call Big Pharma, because, I mean, it's such a big, bold title that it will have a subtitle.
Yeah, but that is perfect. Of course, that's a perfect title.
Yeah, what a great title. And that happened by coincidence, because I was speaking in Delaware and I took this ebook into a printing house just to get a few copies made, so that if people wanted a preview of it or whatever, they could get it at the event. And instead of putting seven Big Pharma myths debunked on the cover, they just put Big Pharma on the cover. And I gave them this picture of a duck dressed as a doctor, which they put on. I was like, the booklet just says Big Pharma. That is perfect. So
I do like the duck as a doctor, though, because of what that says. I do kind of like that.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get that as part of the cover. I've like commissioned a couple of artists to do this, and I'm going to decide.
So is it going to be like a duck in a white coat with a stethoscope?
Yeah, with a stethoscope and a scalpel. And my idea was to have him have a COVID mask on. But
yes,
he's trying to hide this beak behind the COVID mask.
Yeah, as if a COVID mask, even if masking worked, how would it possibly work with a beak? I just love it.
Right.
Yet it would be mandated at all the duck restaurants. You know, they would mandate it anyway, even though it makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so it's been quite a creative process as well, which is really interesting, because a lot of the time when you write nonfiction, well, I don't know if you experience this, but I think I'm just going to be doing reporting. But then you always find interesting little ways to present the information that you never thought of before. And on the chapter regarding, it's not in this booklet, but in the final book it will be, just to give people a sneak peek, like government driving the price of healthcare through the roof, rather than like just go through all the regulations and things like that. I say, like, imagine you were a doctor and you were trying to open a hospital. And then I go through, you know, I tell a story of all the obstacles you come up against and things like that. So finding little devices is really fun. Yeah, this booklet fulfills a bunch of functions. It gets a bunch of the like most critical information out as quickly as possible, because it's really critical at this time that people know this stuff. Secondly, it will get you on a mailing list so that you'll get to know when the final book's coming out. And also, it's a little bit of a fundraiser, really, because I've taken, like, I'm really serious about this book. I really want to finish it. And I'm taking contributions, voluntary contributions on the site when you download the book. So if you have got some money, please put your hand in your pocket, because I'm like doing 3, 4, 5 hours a day during the week on this book, which means during that time, I can't be working. So if I can't be working, I'm not making money. I'm probably going to go out to Mexico or somewhere relatively cheap to live for a few months as well, to finish it off as well, so I can enjoy some sun, because I really don't like the Scottish winter. So it's like a passion project that's like taking up my, like, it's like the center of my focus right now. I think it's really important, and I think it'll do well, because this is definitely the topic of the hour.
So the idea is that this ebook is in a way a tease of your larger project coming out in the not too distant future.
Yeah. So it's like, well, if you think that this material is good, just wait till you see what I've got coming out in the full length paperback.
Yeah. Well, it worked with me, because now I'm dying to see it. So in a way, I almost feel guilty asking you to get into specifics, because there are so many of them. In particular, I mean, I want you to feel free. You can direct this conversation anywhere you want it to go. But as I looked through it, I felt like there was particularly shocking material in, let's see, the chapters about pharmaceutical medicine as scientific, pharmaceutical medicine treats disease. Those two in particular, the assumptions that undergird a lot of this are generally unexamined, and certainly unexamined by the general public. Where do you even want to start? You have like a million examples of things that I think people feel like, because of quote unquote modern medicine, we live longer, more fulfilled, happier lives. And one of the points you make is you have to make a distinction between, when you look at quote modern medicine, you have to separate out surgical procedures for one thing, because yeah, maybe they are better at surgical procedures, but are they actually, have they cured anything? Have they cured all, you list all these different things. Are they cured, or we just have these palliatives that help us struggle along a little bit more with them? So anyway.
Well, yeah, thank you.
Your turn.
Well, I mean, if pharmaceutical medicine is so effective, why is it that all of the chronic diseases that people tend to suffer from in their life are more prevalent now than they were 50 years ago and more prevalent than they were like 70 years ago? You know, there's more diabetes, there's more Alzheimer's disease, there's more heart. You've got a 1 in 3 chance of getting cancer now, as opposed to a 1 in 10 chance of getting cancer in the 1970s. And on that point, they've been so deceptive with people that sometimes they make it look like people are surviving after cancer treatment for longer just because they're detecting it earlier. So if they detect the cancer 3 months earlier, it makes it look like people live 3 months longer. So say if they're doing so well at treating disease, why is it that they have to actually deceive people with figures in that way? So, you know, we're more obese, more people have arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, asthma, migraines, people suffer from more stress, anxiety and depression, acid reflux, ulcers, stomach problems. More people are on psychiatric drugs. In fact, between 1999 and 2012, the percentage of Americans on antidepressants nearly doubled. Now, outside of mainstream health, you know, there's studies coming out showing the link between the microbiome in the gut and mental health afflictions like depression and anxiety, where they could like even predict how much anxiety and depression people had by checking the level of certain toxins which bad bacteria would give off in their blood. And, you know, they could predict how happy or anxious they would feel by looking at their microbiome. What was causing people to have such bad digestion? Well, for one thing, antibiotics don't just kill off bad bacteria. They kill off good bacteria in your body as well. Antibiotic. Anti means against. Bio means life. These introduce toxicity to the cells in the body indiscriminately. Not that there's never a case to take antibiotics, of course. If you really, really need it, you should take it. But in the old days, a lot of the time, the doctor would say, sip some water and stay in bed for a few days and rest, and your body will take care of it. By over-prescribing medication, you've created, you know, these superbugs, which are a real risk to people today. And I know I've been going on, but on a related point, and one thing I would really like to say about this book, I should have said it in the front end because I think it's really important. What I am trying to do is just go to largely mainstream sources to expose. So I'm going to the CDC, I'm going to the AMA, I'm going to the National Institutes of Health, I'm going to the FDA, and I'm saying, look, this is what the official sources say if you look closely enough. Now, you could go to alternative sources and you could find that they expose that the official sources are lying and the truth is even worse, right? But what I'm saying is, even if you just go with what's publicly admitted in the public record, what they're saying is not true. So everyone believes that we're living longer because of pharma, but according to the CDC themselves, they told us in 1999 that while the average lifespan of people in the USA had lengthened by more than 30 years since 1900, 25 years of the gain are attributable to advances in public health. So we're talking about running water through your taps, sanitary sewage conditions, bigger living spaces for people so they're not all crowded together, sharing dirt and disease. And, you know, all the refrigerators and the other conveniences that we so gladly enjoy. Now, of the remaining 5 years, 3.5 of them are attributable to preventative medicine and things like that, rather than pharmaceutical science. So a year and a half onto people's life is better than nothing, I grant you. However, when you're spending $4 trillion a year on healthcare, you might, you know, as economics enthusiasts, we want to like kind of do a cost-benefit analysis. You know, on the left, here's how much money we're spending. On the right, here's how much benefit we're getting for that. What is the opportunity cost? Now, I'm not into state intervention in the society, but if all you had to do was bribe people to take gym classes, you know, pay them to go to a class at the gym, pay them to eat better, you know, I would much rather they were doing that than spending what they're spending on Medicare and Medicaid for chronic diseases that are preventable. So I guess that's my elevator pitch for It's not that elevator, I admit, Tom. I'm not a person who's known for being able to give short explanations of nuanced issues, but those are some of the myths that I find most prevalent and most shocking.
In talking about cancer, you point out that people have got a 1 in 3 chance of getting it these days, whereas about 100 years ago, they had a 1 in 10 chance of getting it. Mm-hmm. Interesting. You say, despite the fact they've spent at least $500 billion on research in cancer, cancer rates are off the charts. Rates of heart disease are no lower either, nor are the rates of stroke, diabetes, chronic lower respiratory disease, and so on. Now, when you were listing all these different ailments mm-hmm. that are as or more prevalent now as compared to in the past, could they say as a response to that, that at least with some of those, the reason for that is that we now have a name for these conditions, whereas 100 years ago, they would have said, we have no idea what's wrong with you, go home, and therefore you're not recorded as having lupus or whatever?
Well, I mean, some of the names for these conditions have changed over the years and people call them different things. I mean, you just like look at the general state of health in these days. I think really, to be honest, when you look at the kind of diseases that people are suffering from, it seems to be that the lifestyle that people are living seems to be at the root of more or less all of them. Of course, there's genetic things that people are predisposed to. And of course, some people are just unlucky. But what you usually see is someone gets some mild condition, they go to the mainstream doctors thinking that they're going to get cured. But mainstream doctors are even told in the hospital not to use the word cure. They only say they're treating the patient. They don't believe in mainstream medicine that anything is prescribed to cure, because in mainstream medicine, they think that if the body was clever enough to cure itself, then, you know, it would be clever enough not to get disease in the first place. So what I've learned from my research is you can't throw off one switch in the body and just adjust something, you know, just the same way that bodybuilders who abuse steroids, there's no safe way to abuse steroids. You can try all you want, but if you throw off testosterone, you're going to throw off everything else as well. And people will still get depression, suicidal ideation, road rage, and things like that when the cows come home to roost. The same is true with all pharmaceutical compounds. You cannot just treat depression, because serotonin doesn't just work in the brain. It works in the digestive system. It works in the immune system. If you're throwing off that lever, you're throwing off everything. So what happens is over time, the patient's condition declines. And what is seen when there's 10,000 different diseases, you need 10,000 different pills to treat each of those diseases. When you realize that all disease, all is maybe a big word, arises out of the underlying cellular condition of the body, then you have a completely different outlook. You realize that no pharmaceutical compound has any nutritional elements in it. So the best you can do with a pharmaceutical compound is to treat the patient and mitigate their symptoms in the short term while you look at the underlying condition of the body, and that's what one ought to be treating. So you, for that, you need, you know, whatever, 16 amino acids, the full complement of vitamins, minerals, and things like that. But there also might be a whole bunch of things in people's cells that ought not to be there, like excess of metabolic wastes or toxic chemicals that come in from the environment as well. So I feel like, yeah, well, I'll let you come back on what I've said, because I tend to go on.
The thing is, there's so much to absorb here for somebody who's, it's like introducing libertarianism to somebody in an hour and throwing, right, you know, as many shocking things that are the opposite of what they've been led to believe. I mean, because let's face it, libertarianism is based on a lot of propositions that are the opposite of what you've been led to believe, you know, your whole life. Right. And I, you know, at age 50, I'm not quite ready. I'm not as ready to accept things that I have been told the opposite of my whole life. Right. But again, after 2020, my mind is much more open to the possibility that maybe the confidence with which certain medical propositions are advanced is more of a bluff and trickery, frankly, than founded in real confidence. I mean, that's, I don't know what else to think after all this.
Thank you so much. I love that I actually have the ability to shock someone. These days we think we've heard it all. And if this really does blow people's minds, like, I will be so proud and I'll be so happy. But I mean, really what I love about this project is it does empower people to improve their own health. without changing the system. Now, the final book is going to, I'm a libertarian, I can't lay off it. It's going to include a bunch of solutions and things like that that are system-wide. However, the great thing about it is you can just read the book and use what you learn to step out the system a bit individually if you choose to, or you can continue with your own habits. You said you were of the opinion that, you know, pharmaceutical science was probably just as effective as they said it was, and people who were obsessed with that maybe had a screw loose. That's probably because you never encountered disease that you went to the doctors and they couldn't sufficiently treat to your satisfaction. Well, I mean, I'm making a lot of presumptions.
No, but that is true. That is true.
Okay, yeah. Okay, no, okay.
You're absolutely
okay.
Right. So, yeah.
Early on in life, right, I had a bunch of things go on when I was a youngster. And one of the things that really struck me was I had a bunch of different symptoms that the doctor would give me creams and things like that for, and I'd treat them and they'd go away for a while and then they'd come back. And then once I was recommended a naturopathic doctor on the Isle of Wight in the south of England, so I went to see the guy, and interestingly, he had a PhD in the medical sciences as well. So he'd actually gone down the mainstream route, and he sometimes even got invited to conferences in Europe. And a lot of people didn't like him being there, but some people really, really liked him being there because he'd rattle a few cages. You know, someone would come up from a pharmaceutical company and say, herbal medicine is nonsense. And he'd be like, well, excuse me, like, why is it that this drug that you're company makes and this one, all of the active ingredients are from plant extracts. You know, the most famous one is statins, which are like, I think it's red rice that they're an extract from or something like that. So obviously the reason why this is no longer prevalent is because you can't patent herbs. But I've learned that a lot of the time herbs are used to do the same thing as pharmaceutical drugs are doing these days, which is just to mitigate symptoms without actually treating the underlying cause. Although that's not, it's not the tool, it's what you do with the tool. I'm not against pharmaceuticals. They have a place, the same as everything has a place, but it's not the all. So when this naturopath looked at my symptoms, he would go, well, all of that's your digestion. And he gave me a bunch of things and, you know, I used it and, you know, for a few months and right enough, all of my symptoms went away. And at that point, I was like, the doctors don't really know what they're talking about because they think everything, and that's what they call it, holistic medicine. They think that every symptom is a disease, but it's just a symptom. So he looked at it at a systems level. Now that worked for a while, but I learned there was deeper to go. And so it's been a big learning journey for me, even over, I think, a decade and a half. For a long time, I had a skin condition on my feet. It's unsightly. It's a little bit embarrassing to mention it. Again, like the mainstream doctors could do nothing for this kind of thing. They said they could give me antifungals, but they said there was no point in doing it because it'd take 3 months to work. As soon as I stopped taking it, they'd go away. Now, what I've learned from the naturopathic view is you shouldn't be treating the fungus or the mold. What you have to understand is there's stuff in your body that the fungus and mold is feeding on. You remove that from your body, and then there's nothing for them to live on. Through a combination of fasting and juicing, I've like 95% eliminated the condition from my feet. I've got before and afterwards pictures for anyone who wants to look at them. And I kind of like intend to eliminate the other 5 or 10% as well. So I guess that's how I came to this. I came to it from firsthand experience.
All right, let me interrupt with a quick word of thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. It's probably fair to say by now, my listeners are familiar with Blinkist. It's an amazing app that gives you the opportunity to come into contact with all kinds of interesting new ideas in dozens of different subject areas by means of giving you the central critical points of major important works of nonfiction in just 15 minutes. So just the typical American commute can get you 3 to 4 books under your belt. And we're talking everything from biographies to entrepreneurship, history, money and investment, parenting, philosophy, psychology, religion, science, you name it. You'll also find libertarian classics like Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty and Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom, as well as conservative classics like The Conservative Mind by Russell Kirk or The Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater, even Righteous Indignation by Andrew Breitbart. But now with their brand new feature Blinkist Connect, you can kick things up a notch. You can share your account with another person of your choice, so that's like 2 premium accounts for the price of 1, no extra cost, and easily share Blinkist content among yourselves. And you can add additional comments and thoughts to the recommendations to learn and to discuss the content being shared. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your 7-day free trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. And now for a limited time, you can even use Blinkist Connect to share your premium account. You get 2 premium subscriptions for the price of 1. It's not, of course, logically necessary that you have to believe in natural remedies if you don't believe in, I guess, allopathic medicine. You could believe that we live in a horrible universe where nothing works. You know, it's possible to believe that. And I agree. I personally am kind of right there at the moment. You know, I'm not convinced by the other side, but I haven't really, you know, I don't know that much, but I know that there have been times where we've tried things that haven't worked.
Right.
But on the other hand, that's true of, you know, the existing medical establishment too. But let me ask you this, because we're all sick and tired of hearing the expression, follow the science, listen to the science. The science and how the science is carried out in medicine is interesting. There's a famous, very famous paper from Stanford professor John Ioannidis called Why Most Published Research Findings Are False. That's from 2005, which if you haven't read that, you should take a look at it. But having looked at this, what can you say about the way medical science tends to proceed? Because what we learned in the 16th century, I guess, from Francis Bacon, is that you just impartially gather data and then you look at it and you try to formulate a hypothesis about it. And then you see where, you know, you test these hypotheses and all that. And that's the way it is. And there's no preconceived ideas. You just gather data, you form hypotheses. How much resemblance does that bear to the way it's actually done?
Well, the thing is, all of the research, more or less, is done by pharma. And then they present those results that they intend to the regulator. So technically that they can do a bunch of studies and just present the ones that give the result that's favorable to their drug to the FDA. And whenever they do comparative trials of drugs, it's funny, whoever funds the study, their drug seems to always come out on top. So there's a lot of different ways that people can manipulate science when it comes to pharmaceutical medicine. And I go through a quick rundown at the beginning of chapter 5, which is called Pharmaceutical Medicine as Scientific. I mean, some of them are totally galling. For example, they can treat side effects and then claim that the rate of side effects are low. Or especially in the drug trials for antidepressants and antipsychotics, what they'd often do is they'd have a group that were already on the drug, then they take half of them off the drug and call them the placebo group, and then test them against the group that's acclimatized to the drug and say, oh, the group that was on the drug did better than the placebo group. Well, like, I'm not really surprised because, you know, the placebo group were all withdrawing from the drug. So obviously they weren't going to be doing very well. So then you can generalize from the wrong demographics. You know, you can do a study on young, healthy adults. They're unlikely to have complications from a drug, but then you start recommending the drug to less healthy people and old people and kids and things like that. And there's more examples of these. The interesting thing is, when you actually look at what the official, and I just go through a whole bunch of quotes from authorities on this kind of thing, like, the editors of the New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet both resigned in disgust, claiming that at least 70% of the articles in their journal were just trash and biased towards corporate healthcare industry bodies that funded the research. There's all these quotes from even places like the Institute of Medicine, which estimated that less than half of the treatments and tests are backed up by strong scientific evidence. British Medical Journal used to publish a report every few years outlining how much of medicine is based on actual scientific evidence. And they stopped doing that report for some reason in 2013 after it found that 11% of medical treatments are beneficial and 50% have unknown effectiveness. So there's a new book out by a great writer called Abramson, who wrote a book called Overdosed America before, which I leaned heavily on a few years ago when I started reading and writing about this stuff. He's got a new one called Sickening, which has got quite a lot of stuff. He's not very libertarian, but he's got a lot of good stuff on bad science and medicine. So that's definitely going to be... This chapter just gives you a basic rundown of it. It's going to be a really developed chapter in the final product.
When do you think that'll be ready? Oh boy, that sounded painful.
Well, the thing is, it's one of these projects where the scope of it can change in a minute because, like, I find that I have to break a chapter into two parts and I really want to go deeply into something. It's like, should I aim to get it out as quickly as possible or should I write another chapter on, say, the opiate crisis? One chapter I really want to keep in is a chapter on psychiatry. Obviously, as a mental health professional myself, that's something that's really interesting to me. But so I'm going to say sometime in the new year and not too far into the new year. I like to aim for March.
Okay, of 2023. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'd like to get it out sooner, but I just want to be realistic.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it kind of reminds me of the, not that it'll be quite this long, but the history of thought that Rothbard was commissioned to write, that they thought, okay, it'll be like one volume. It'll resemble Heilbronner's The Worldly Philosophers. And then it turned into this sprawling, huge project because of the sheer amount of stuff he found. And he just felt compelled to report on it
right.
all. And I would think, with the big pharma stuff, the more you find, and not to mention, you know,
and it's all interesting.
And it's
well.
All interesting. And if you do an episode like this, you're going to get a million people writing to you saying, right. well, don't forget to mention this. Don't forget to mention that.
Right.
So being on the Tom Wood Show will be both a blessing and a curse for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. It might get to the point where I think it might be worth doing volume one and volume two, just like Rothbard's history. If I think that that would be the best way to get it out really soon. I mean, what do you think of that? Is that a silly idea or is that...
It's not. I have some experience in publishing, but not with multi-volume series. And I don't know how that works. I don't know if... Does volume one do well and volume two doesn't because you can't get as
right.
many... Or nobody's going to buy volume two unless they have volume one. So I don't know how to advise you on that, unfortunately.
Or maybe this will be a three-phase project where this is the first phase and then I'll do the... first version, and then I'll do the expanded edition if it's really popular.
Now, that's also a possibility. Yeah. Think this
through. So it's all to play for.
Yeah, no kidding. So better you than me, because I don't think I could manage a project like this. I would be expanding it and expanding it. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I have to say, it's really thrilling to wake up every day and know exactly what you're doing in your life. And I wake up every morning, I see my clients, and then I'm excited to go to a cafe and sit down with my laptop and crack in for a few hours. So it's been a very fulfilling period in my life.
Why haven't you started any kind of crowdfunding to get you support as you're working on this?
Okay, there's been reasons for that, but it's a little bit tied to not being able to give a reasonable estimate of a date at the moment. This ebook kind of is a crowdfunding attempt because when you go to download it, you can download it for absolutely free. But I'd really, really, really love it if you just put your credit card details in there and give me whatever you can afford, like 10 or 20 bucks or something like that, because this book is going to blow people's freaking minds, right? So I just like, if you can afford it, please do afford it. You just go to 7pharmamyths.com, download it for free if you want and send it to all your friends. Or if you can afford it, put some money in my Stripe account and then you can send the email. So you can send the ebook on to all of your friends. So that would be like deeply, 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 deeply appreciated at this point in time.
Okay. So the number 7? So
7, that's right. Yep. Thank you for telling me
that. The number 7, pharmamyths.
Pharmamyths.com.
So that's where you can get the ebook that I've read and that we've been talking about today that will give you a tantalizing glimpse into the mind of Antony Samaroff and where he's going with his current project. So go do that. Support Antony. Let's talk about this off the air, about publishing and how you're going to go about it. I don't want to bore people with those details, but I do want to discuss that with you. Let's try to maximize your reach here. So thank you, Antony. Always great talking to you.
Great talking to you too, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.